Start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good afternoon, everyone. We'll start with a roll call. If I can start to my right, and if you'll just introduce yourself and tell who you're with.
Okay. Danny Ferrer with the True Commission.
Charlie Cofer, Public Defender.
Sam Musa, Chief Administrative Officer, Mayor's Office.
Judge Center Fitt.
Anna Lopez Brochet, City Council.
Lee Hutton with the State Attorney's Office.
Hello, I'm Ellen Schmidt with the Ethics Commission.
All right, that covers the roll call. We'll look at the minutes from our March meeting, March 22nd, 2017. Are there any comments, additions, deletions, any issues anyone needs to bring up? All right, I don't hear anything. So all in favor of approval, if you'll say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the minutes are approved for March 22nd. Budgetary oversight discussion. Mr. Hoffman?
Yes, ma'am. So good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for your time today and for lending your expertise to assisting our office and your trust in me that I could lead the office. So this, I understand, was a topic of discussion at the last meeting with Mr. Rohan. This is what Mr. Rohan drafted. I've reviewed it and made some minor edits to it. The only real substantive edit I've made was I just tried to move the meetings into April. What I'd like to do is try and do a November meeting with the committee, present my report, present to the council in December, and then in April present my budget and an update on the office to the committee, and then present to the council again my six-month status report in May. And Steve had drafted it for the end of March, and I just felt like usually those last 2 weeks in March are Duval County spring break, and I just didn't know how conducive that time period may be to getting it done, so I pushed it into April. But other than that, the document is what Mr. Rohan drafted prior to his departure, and hopefully captures the intent of what was discussed at the previous meeting.
And you're talking about Directive 2017-1?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct.
Specifically page 2, I guess. Sets out the dates.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't see where that actually mentions the November.
It doesn't mention it in here, ma'am. Sorry, this is just for the budget review, so it just mentions the April. I've mentioned the other two just to talk about the cycle that I'd like to be on.
Okay. Again, anyone have any discussion on that? Is there an agreement about the date? No, I don't.
Just give us a second, please. So all this action, if I may through the chair, Judge,
yes,
all this action will take place before your presentation to the Mayor's Budget Review Committee.
That's correct,
your
yes,
operational
sir.
Budget.
Yes, sir.
And this strictly relates to your operational budget.
That's correct, yes, sir. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I guess actually that does make sense.
Yes.
For him to come to us and talk to us before
right.
Then he's going to the council. So.
Correct. Comes to us and then we go to council.
All right.
And I did recognize, I apologize, there was a typo. When it was originally March, it was 31st. I did not change the 31st to 30th, but I'll correct that before we...
What page? What are you...
On page 2, sir, there, paragraph number 2, or bullet number 2, it says April 31st.
April 15th to April 31st.
So it should be April 30th.
Thank you.
Right.
All right. I believe we would need to approve that. With that one correction, the 31st to the 30th, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. No opposition. We'll accept that change on Directive 2017-001. And we have new business, an update on the Office of the Inspector General activities. Mr. Hoffman, I think we're again back to you.
Yes, ma'am. So I've not been in the job quite 6 months, so I still like to say I'm new, although some people tell me I'm not. As I told a few of the committee members before, it's very tough coming from an environment where you have 24 years of institutional knowledge to an environment where you have 0 years of institutional knowledge. But I really want to thank the mayor's administration, specifically Mr. Musa and Marlene Russell, who's really been our point of contact for the office and has done a phenomenal job assisting us in getting our recommendations and reviewing our reports and assisting us in scheduling. That's been a great relationship, and they have been very helpful during my first 6 months in scheduling meetings with the various leaders from the city departments, which was helpful because it helped me explain what everybody does, but depressing at the same time when I realized everybody else had been in the city government for 35 years other than me. So I was amazed when I went to the fire department, but it seems like everybody I met had been there in excess of 30 years, which I think speaks to the culture and the climate within the city that people want to stay around for that long. I really want to thank the council members that I've met with. They've been very helpful in assisting me through the budget process and just getting my feet on the ground. And then also to the committee members that I've met with who have been very helpful in assisting me and getting my feet on the ground. And then finally, really and most importantly, to the members of the office who have, true professionals, have really helped me with their expertise, with their knowledge of the city, and with auditing experience, with investigation experience, and a lot of questions of just who do you call. So that has been very helpful, and I've really appreciated that openness and that willingness from everybody to help me, because otherwise I think I would have already failed. I'm very pleased to present the 2017 annual report. We actually got it finished in time. I think we pulled it off the printer as we were coming here. Mm-hmm. And again, I really want to thank my deputy, Lisa Green, who dealt with a lot of contradictory edits from me. As I was doing it, I would change things and then change it back to what I changed it to before. To Tina Solosky, our finance and intake unit manager, who I had great ideas in my mind of what I wanted some charts to look like, and she was able to create them for me, even though they probably weren't clearly explained by me. And then finally to our executive assistant, Emily Edge, who's really the one that put it together, got it to the print shop, and got everything done so we could present it here today. And my hope was to have it done here today so that we could present it and not have to have an additional meeting to then present the report. What I'd like to do is go through some of the numbers for fiscal year 2017. They're highlighted in the report. The office received 103 complaints in fiscal year 2017.
May I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
James, are they highlighted specifically on any particular page?
Yes, sir. My apologies. If you turn to page, in a couple places, two, they're highlighted in the executive summary on page two.
Thank you.
Under the bullets. And then there are graphs as well, sir, in...
Okay. 12, 13, 14.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. This way we can follow you as you're...
And actually, the complaints are on... find them. Page 17 that cover the complaints received over the last three fiscal years.
Thank you.
So we've received 103 this year. That's the highest the office has ever received. In 2015, in the first year of operation, we received 100. Last year, we received 83. I don't think that number is really that important, only because those are complaints that come into our office. We can drive those in some respects by our outreach efforts so that people know about our office, but ultimately it's up to the individual citizens or the employees to contact us. I think what we can drive is the number of complaints we closed in fiscal year 2017. And just to give you some background, in 2015, we closed 37. In 2016, we closed 63. And in 2017, we closed 102. And 69 of those that were closed originated in fiscal year 2017. The others were complaints that lingered from fiscal year 2015 or 2016. And I think that's important. That's a 62% increase from fiscal year 2016, and it really shows the benefit of stable staffing. Mm-hmm. I think 2017 was the first year that the OIG really enjoyed having all of their investigators, their auditor, their contract oversight individual in place, and our ability to close that number over what we did in 2016 is really a benefit of that stable staffing, of having all of those folks in place. And I think as we go into 2018 will be the first fiscal year the office has started since its existence where all of the staff will be in place at the start of the fiscal year. The office issued 12 published reports. We issued 5 investigative reports, 5 contract oversight reports, and 2 audit reports. And I really want to highlight the contract oversight observations only because this is the first fiscal year the office has issued any contract oversight observations. And again, I think that goes back to the stable staffing. So the first employee hired by the office back in December of 2015 was a contract oversight specialist. That individual left after 5 months. Our current contract oversight specialist was hired in January of 2016. But I'm sure, as Mr. Musa can tell you, and as I've learned, the city's procurement and contract is not something you can pick up overnight. And it really has taken that individual being in the position for 2 years to be in a position where he can issue those reports and has the expertise to really hopefully add some value to the city and to JEA with the reports that we issue. The published reports aren't all that we do, and I want to stress that, because if you read those 12 reports, you might say that doesn't seem like a lot. But in addition to those 12 reports, we've issued 10 management inquiries, 27 management referrals, and one corrective action memos. Those are not published on our websites. Those are usually provided either to the administration to identify an operational issue for them or to JEA management to identify an operational issue for them. We may or may not ask for a response. If it is a management inquiry, we ask for a response back on what they've done. If it's a management referral, we don't ask for a response. And in some cases, those management referrals may be very low level. So a management referral also includes those situations where a citizen might call us about trash collection, and we refer those to 630 City for a response. But because our hotline number is out there, they'll call us by mistake.
May I ask a question, Judge?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Hoffman, just curious, management referrals that you turn over to us, are those considered as cases closed, complaints closed? Are those
yes, sir.
Your complaints closed number?
Yes, sir. So anything that we log into our system as an intake matter, we will then consider closed.
And the 102 include complaints that had no merit that you closed on your own without bothering anybody?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Thank
that
you.
Is true. And in some cases, just so it's clear, too, we may close one investigation. That may close 12 complaints.
Right.
So we may receive more than one complaint on a particular issue. I also wanted to go through some other stats. In 2017, we identified $50,000, a little over $50,000 in monetary recoveries that could either be recouped or saved by the administration. That included about $41,000 in our cell phone audit, and then about a little over $10,000 related to a JEA case where the employee was claiming excess overtime, and JEA recouped that money as a result of our investigation. I have a statement on value. It might be a little long. I apologize, but I do want to touch on it briefly here. My goal as the IG is to accurately reflect what we do. And there's a lot of discussion about question cost, avoidable cost, and all of that stuff. To me, that's all funny money, and it doesn't add any value. The only value that we add is that money that we can truly save, so Mr. Musa doesn't have to spend that money next year because we've identified it in a report because there's a cell phone that somebody had and they're no longer using, or money that we actually recouped into the Treasury because an employee paid back for something. That's why our numbers are low. A lot of other OIG offices will catalog question cost, avoidable cost, and to me, they just don't add value for a couple of reasons. One, because it's not real money that gets returned to anybody. And two, it inflates the idea that there's more fraud than there really is. And I think I have an obligation to report to the citizens, the committee, and the government the fraud that actually exists and not just try to inflate numbers to support my office. So that's what I will do. When I got into the job, I looked at some other OIGs, and they report numbers in excess of $55 million over 7 years. And they look great. And I'm sure the council and Mr. Musa would say, you can have all the money you want if you get us this $55 million. But when I started to look at those numbers deeper, I realized that the actual money they returned over a seven-year span was only $2.2 million. The rest of that money is question cost. And the best way I can explain question cost is, if my wife and I have a joint checking account, we both have to sign the check, and we agree to put a pool in our backyard, and she goes out and spends $80,000 on the pool but doesn't have me sign the check, a lot of OIGs would say that's a question cost. I don't agree that it is, because I didn't sign the check. We got what we wanted. We both agreed that we wanted it. We just didn't follow the right procedure. And certainly we should identify the fact that we didn't follow the procedure, but to claim that all of that $80,000 is a question cost, to me, is disingenuous and inflates what we do. And I think we should accurately report what we do. So I don't know if there's any questions on that or comments. Or I know as I looked back over the meetings and the events that were held leading to the creation of the office, there was this idea that the office was going to pay for itself. And I believe that the office does pay for itself and the deterrent effect that it has. I mean, we've done a lot of employee overtime abuse with JEA. We've done some vehicle usage abuse. We've done some other issues that get out there. We've had, and I'll go through it here in a minute, but two arrests as a result of our investigations this year. We've had two employee terminations as a result of our investigations this year. And that's removed underperforming employees and hopefully replace them with high-performing employees who ultimately return more value to the citizens. It's hard for me to quantify that, but again, I think it's disingenuous for me to start saying every time the city does something with a contract that doesn't follow the letter of the law, for me to say that's a question cost, because I think it just invites the idea that there's more fraud than there really is, when there is no fraud in that case. It's just Joe, either because of incompetence or bureaucratic inefficiency, didn't follow the process. Sorry, that was long-winded, but I've thought a lot about that, and I wanted to put it out there.
How many times did you practice that?
Twice. As I mentioned, we had two arrests resulting in two deferred prosecutions. One of those related to a license plate for a city employee. It was a city license plate that he was putting on a personal vehicle. And then one of those related to a JEA employee for overtime fraud. And then we had two resignations, one related to a JEA employee. Well, actually, they were both related to secondary employment violations, one for a JEA employee and one for a city employee. And then in our published reports, we had 32 total recommendations that we provided either to the city management or to JEA. And again, I want to stress that the city management's been incredibly helpful with our recommendations. Every recommendation we provided them, they've implemented and provided us feedback, and either have provided us an update to the instruction that they updated or some other feedback on the recommendations that we present to them. And then finally, at the end of 2017, or actually not at the end, when I got here in June, I started working on a strategic plan for the office, a five-year strategic plan. We've issued that, and that is available on our website, and it's also included as an appendix, I believe it's Appendix 5, to the annual report. So those are the numbers. I was going to then cover some additional highlights. This is the first year that the office executed oversight of JEA pursuant to a protocol that was agreed to between JEA management and the OIG. I think it's been incredibly beneficial and incredibly helpful to our oversight operations over JEA, and what it's really done is reduce duplication. So now we do a lot of joint investigations both with JEA audit services and the JEA interagency detective assigned by JSO. And that protocol has really led to, rather than three different entities trying to do the same thing, all three of those entities focused on one allegation and coming to one final resolution. And usually what we will do is take the criminal investigation and then look at the administrative policies and procedures and provide some recommendations back to JEA on improvement. That protocol was negotiated as a result of Mr. Rohan's hard work on getting in place the contributions from the independent authorities. So as I'm sure you know, in 2017, fiscal year 2017 was our first year of an agreement between the four independents to provide $115,000 in funding to our office. So that protocol was part of that process. That agreement does expire at the end of this fiscal year, and the deputy and I currently have meetings scheduled with JEA management, JEA, the ports, and Transportation Authority to, one, talk about that agreement and hopefully renegotiate it continuing forward in 2019, and then for the three independents that we don't have a protocol in place, to negotiate a protocol agreement with those independents and hopefully increase our oversight activities on them.
Sure. I don't see why not. I mean, do you mind getting questions?
Oh, no, please, I'm sorry. Yes, please ask questions.
Yes.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
The protocol agreements. You don't have protocol agreements with the other three independents?
No, sir. They were not negotiated. They have not been negotiated yet, sir.
That means you have your efforts have not reached out to the other independents.
Correct, sir. So the way the protocol works with JEA is if JEA Audit Services receives a complaint or an allegation, they will contact our office, and we have 24 hours to then respond back to them. So we do not have that relationship in place with the other independents. I went to the ethics meeting with the independent authority ethics officers about 2 weeks ago and presented there on the office and discussed kind of what we do and started to lay the groundwork. And then Lisa and I will go and actually meet with the CEOs for each of the independents and hopefully put those protocols in place, because I think that will, one, reduce some duplication of effort from them doing the same thing that we can do.
Have you received any complaints regarding the other three independents?
We have received one complaint from JAA, I believe, in the history of the office, and one complaint from JTA in the history of the office. I'm not aware of any complaints from the ports.
Do you investigate those, or do you back off because...
No. Well, yes, sir. So we clearly have jurisdiction over them.
I understand you do.
Yes, sir. But
so you do reach out to the independents?
Yes, sir, we do.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the protocol just helps to make it cleaner and identifies that process.
Okay.
I went through the budget process shortly after my arrival, I think I got here June 1st, and I went to MBRC, I believe, the second or third week in June. Again, I want to thank Lisa and Tina. I couldn't have done it without them. I would have looked like a guy with a legal pad trying to talk about numbers I didn't understand. And without their help, I really would not have been able to navigate the budget process. I'm not sure I navigated it particularly well, but I navigated it. We only had one enhancement request this year, and that was to take our executive assistant and move her from a part-time position into a full-time position. It would have increased our budget by about $27,143 overall over what our budget request was. We were ultimately unsuccessful with that, and we'll continue to push for that as we move forward. The reason I think her position is important as a full-time is it really is a force multiplier for her, for our office. Coming from the military, I'm a big tooth-to-tail guy, and I prefer our investigators, our auditors, and our contract oversight folks are out doing work and not tied up formatting reports, generating reports, sending them over. And she does a lot of that work for us, but she does so much more. She's our webmaster. She generated the entire annual report. She's been really folded into the investigative unit as kind of an analyst. So she helps us review information, emails, GPS data from vehicles. One of the things from the committee that I thought was important was the outreach for the office. And you'll see, I'll talk about it in a minute, but in front of you, you have some of the stuff we've worked on since I came in to help increase our outreach to the citizens and the consolidated government. And then we're going to move into accreditation this fiscal year and into fiscal year 2019. And our finance and intake manager is also our accreditation manager. So that's going to require a bit more work for her. So having that position would help us out there as well. But we'll continue to push through for that, and we'll see where we get. I want to say that I personally, and some folks will probably disagree with me, I think where we're at right now with the office, with the addition of that full-time position, is where the office should be. I don't think it needs to grow. I don't want it to be any bigger. I think the people we have, until we develop some additional metrics, is where we need to be. We are the smallest OIG office at the local level in Florida. I provided some data in the annual report this year to show that. The next smallest office is Broward County. They have 20 employees. Palm Beach County has 23, and Miami-Dade has 38. But again, I don't say that to say I think we should get bigger. I don't think we should. I just say that to provide some perspective on where we fit compared to the other local OIGs.
So will you have to ask for that through the budget next year?
Yes, ma'am.
When you said pushing for it, that's...
Yes, ma'am. So we'll continue to ask for it next year. And I think the lesson learned for me, and Mr. Musa can correct me if I'm wrong, is I really need to win at MBRC. Because since it's a balanced budget, and when it goes to the council, it's really balanced at that point. And because we're asking for employee expenses, and those are reoccurring funds, the council is kind of loath to approve reoccurring funds as part of the budget process if it's not in the mayor's initial budget.
Okay. And you're talking about a little more than $23,000.
$27,000. Yes, ma'am. We did have a 7% increase in our budget this year, but that really was not driven by our office. Those expenses that we can control, it was really driven by the pension reform, so there was an automatic 5% increase in salaries. And one thing I looked from looking at the other divisions, we're very defined contribution heavy. And for those organizations that were very defined contribution heavy, we took a larger hit in the budget than those that were defined benefit heavy because of the pension reform agreement. They saw a reduction in their employee benefits, where our employee benefits actually increased this year. And I think as I looked at the mayor's budget across the board, we were one of the few organizations where our retirement benefits actually increased. And I think it's a result of that defined contribution heavy aspect of our office. So I had a little blurb on Manning, but I think I've already really touched on it. I do want to say, as I went back through and looked at some of the initial documents that created the office and some of the discussion, I believe the office was originally envisioned for 10 employees, or at least envisioned in some people's mind. I don't know if that was the council's envision. When the referendum passed, the thought was it would grow to 20. Again, I believe where we sit now is where we should sit, with the addition of that full-time executive assistant. And I think you see, as I mentioned earlier, with that 62% increase in closed complaints, the value that that staffing has added to us and our ability to hopefully effectively carry out our mission. One thing I realized when I got here is there's a lot of legacy complaints from the first years of operation of the office, and I tried to figure out why that was. And my opinion is the manner in which the office was stood up was not ideal. So it opened October 2014 and started taking complaints October 1st, 2014. Well, it didn't hire its first investigator until February of 2015. And when that person was hired, there were already 23 complaints in the bin. It didn't hire its second investigator until the very end of fiscal year, literally on the last day of fiscal year 2015, so September 30th. At that point, there were 100 complaints in the bin. And so, unfortunately, the office is still digging out from a lot of those legacy complaints because of staffing issues. And I think where we're at now, we'll continue to move forward from there. And my hope is that by the end of this fiscal year, those will all be done and we can really focus on those that are coming in. As I mentioned, outreach, it's one of the things I thought was important to the committee. So when I came in, I took a look at that. I had some ideas. Some were good. Some were terrible. One was posters for the break rooms. We provided an example of what we pushed out to the city. Again, Marlene was fantastic in helping us facilitate getting those out there. And I've seen them up in a couple various break rooms and other places. When I met with the tax collector, he was generous enough to offer to put our office information up on his electronic bulletin boards throughout his various offices in the area. So we've done that. We developed a pamphlet that we passed out in some of the education and outreach activities that we do, and we provided an example of that as well. This year, the only real outreach I've done so far is with the Ethics Commission. I went and spoke before them and explained our office a little bit. My hope is that after the first of the year here is to reach out to the CPACs and start there, and then I'm always open to other ideas. So if anybody on the committee has an idea of an organization in which we could go speak at and present about our office, I would love to hear it. And then I started a web-based survey. I'm trying to push it out, although nobody really wants to respond. So, but through SurveyMonkey, we created a survey to try to figure out how many people know about our mission, our website, and those areas so that we can get some feedback to better focus where we push our outreach efforts. And we've pushed it out on the website. It's in the annual report. And then the Daily Record did an article on the office. I included it in the Daily Record article as well. Thought we were going to do some social media stuff, but I met with Marcia Oliver, and then I also talked to some other OIGs. And through my conversations with them, I realized that it's just not really worth the effort. The other OIGs in Florida that I spoke with said they don't really get any balance from it. And Marcia said, listen, unless you're going to be very interactive with it and what you do is kind of hard to be interactive, it's probably not worth it. Whistleblower, I have some concerns with the way the ordinance code is currently written as it relates to whistleblower protections. So I'm working with OGC now to hopefully rewrite those so that they better reflect the Florida statute and provide the protection that's required by that. And then my other concern is right now my decision is binding on the Civil Service Board. I'm not really sure that's the way it should be. I think I make a decision whether or not an individual is a whistleblower for purposes of conducting an investigation. I think if they later claim retaliation for due process reasons, they should get a second bite at the apple in front of the Civil Service Board. But I don't know where OGC will come down on that. We've just had some initial conversations. But
Claire, please.
Yes, sir.
Can you further explain that? I didn't quite catch that. You went a little too fast for me.
Sorry, sir. So the way the ordinance is currently written, if an employee makes a complaint or a contractor and they ask for whistleblower protection, I evaluate it. I look at the requirements under Florida law, and I say, okay, it falls within one of these two categories to identify them as a whistleblower. If at some point in the future they claim a retaliatory action was taken against them as a result of that status.
A retaliatory action by whom?
By whoever they work for, JEA, the city.
Okay.
Then they can go to the Civil Service Board and argue that in front of the Civil Service Board. The board asks me if I've designated them as a whistleblower.
Okay.
I don't believe that that's the way the statute intends it. I believe that for due process reasons, that person should be able to make an argument in front of an independent board on whether they are or are not a whistleblower. I believe my determination purely is for confidentiality reasons and investigation reasons, not for retaliatory action reasons.
I think so.
And so what happens if you don't declare that they're a whistleblower?
So for appointed officials, so the whistleblower protections in the Civil Service Manual are the one area where, so I can be fired by you guys for, if I come in, if you didn't like my tie. I probably can't because of the ordinance code, but if I was a regular appointed employee and I worked for Mr. Musa and I came in one day and I did something he didn't like, he could fire me and I have no appeal rights to that decision because I'm appointed. The whistleblower protections are the one area where if you're an appointed official and you believe you've been fired for retaliatory reasons, then you can still go to the Civil Service Board and argue that.
No, I get that. So if they go in front of the Civil Service Board and they ask you if you've actually deemed that they are a whistleblower and you say no, what does that mean?
So it hasn't happened, but my thought would be if I say no, then there can be no retaliatory action because they've not met the first element of the requirement, right? So two requirements. One, you are a whistleblower, and two, a retaliatory action has been taken. If I've not designated you a whistleblower, then you've already failed element number one. And I think the employee should be entitled to argue that in front of an independent panel. I don't think they should be beholden to my decision as an individual on whether or not they are or not.
May I, Madam Judge?
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Hoffman, you got to help me. So you declare, you look at the conditions and decide whether Lisa is qualified to be, is qualified under the whistleblower law.
Yes, sir.
So she's been deemed a whistleblower. So I want to take action against Lisa. And she's a civil servant.
Yes, sir.
You're saying she can go to the Civil Service Board and put in a grievance, a complaint, and what are they going to ask you?
They are just going to ask me if I have designated her as a whistleblower.
And you're going to say yes?
And that's it. Yes, sir.
Okay. What difference does that make? I don't understand why they're asking you that.
Well, that's my question. I don't know what difference it makes either.
Yeah, okay.
I think we should be removed from the retaliation complaint process. The reason that I'm...
Well, they can call you in as a witness and say, have you certified her as a whistleblower? You say yes. Done.
Yes. Okay. But I think there should be a situation where I say no, and the Civil Service Board could still say, hey, we disagree, and we think they are a whistleblower.
Let me just say, I'm not sure it matters what you decide or we decide. That's probably going to be...
Yeah, I just provide as an
whatever
update.
Whatever happens.
Yes,
yeah, an individual, you know, they're going to take it to court if they don't like...
Right.
The answer. I don't think that's an issue, really, that we
can decide
anyway.
Yeah, I just bring it up as one of the issues that I'm working on. I didn't really,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the OGC says. I would assume there might be some case law out there.
Yes,
and Judge, I wasn't pursuing the question in the vein that we had any decision-making. I was just trying to understand what...
Yes, sir, and once I get an answer from OGC on whether I'm crazy or not, I mean, they may come back and say I'm wrong. In
I can
case.
Give you that answer, whether you're crazy or not.
It doesn't matter, but I think if they come back and say, hey, we think you might have a point there, then my plan at that point was to fold in employee services for further discussion.
Gotcha.
So right now it's just kind of preliminary.
Thank you.
So the next aren't really updates on the office. They were just concerns I had. One is the ordinance as it's currently written as it relates to the committee chair. So the way the ordinance is currently drafted as it relates to the committee chair is that the chair is no longer the chair after I've been confirmed by City Council. And I don't know if that was the intent when it was drafted. I've looked at the other three local OIGs in Florida, and they all designate one member to be the committee chair. So in all three cases, their makeup is a bit different, but in all three cases, it's the chair of the Ethics Commission who is identified in their ordinance code as the committee chair for the committee. And I don't have an answer on what the right answer is. I just think if the desire is to continue to have a chair, we just need to fix the ordinance code so that it reflects that.
I was going to bring up the issue of chair and vice chair here. It's not on our agenda today, so I don't think we can technically handle it. But I was going to ask the committee to think about that and figure we needed to... talk about that. I guess I've been on as chair for about a year and a half now, but it sounds like there's an even bigger issue, which is the ordinance, and we need to think about maybe if we want to put in a request with a council member, you know, to change that ordinance, and if we want to designate one particular agency, one particular member of the panel, or if we want to leave it more open.
Yes, ma'am. And
for
I don't.
The committee to select.
I just wanted to highlight it as an issue. I think that there is a desire to have a continuing chair, and I think the way it's currently drafted, that position kind of expires when I'm confirmed. And I just think it was an oversight when it was drafted.
Okay.
And we can present some options at the next meeting if that's the desire.
Okay. All right. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
The chair?
Yeah, concerning the chair.
I mean, I think we should select it amongst ourselves.
I mean, that would be my thought, as opposed to just selecting one agency, you know, and that that is always the chair. I mean, it seems to me like the committee, like we did have done all along, we selected someone. It was the council president. It was Lori Boyer for some period of time. And then I think when she wanted to come off and I ended up getting elected, but...
Was there an actual election among the committee or a consensus?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, maybe more of a consensus. I was volunteered. You know how it goes. But I like that better than just saying, okay, this person is always. But either way, it sounds like we've got to change the ordinance.
Yes, ma'am. And I think we can rewrite it to just say, you know, we'll serve for a 2-year term. Or whatever term you folks desire, and then subject to re-election.
So the ordinance literally says that the chair goes away once you're confirmed by council?
Yes, sir. The members of the committee shall elect a chairperson who shall serve until the inspector general is confirmed by the city council.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said, actually, because when we were getting ready to schedule the meeting, we were obviously working with Judge Centerfit, and I read the ordinance code, and I said, well, wait a minute.
It seems to be like...
Technically, we are a rudderless.
Imagine that. Maybe we are even with the chair, but is there an agreement that we ask Mr. Hoffman, you know, through his office to tweak some language there? And then I guess we have to get a council person? I'm just not familiar with that. We have to ask a council person to take that then?
I'm happy to advance that.
Yes, ma'am.
And then, I mean, the next thing from a more personal standpoint is that I do think it's time that we consider a new chair, and we need a vice chair. We have Mr. Crescendini, and so we need to do that.
Yeah, if we're getting on that, there is a suggestion in the ordinance about the committee's authority to recommend removal, but it doesn't really talk much about what the ongoing role of this committee is insofar as the office is concerned. For example, regular meetings, a yearly review such as we are conducting now. So,
yes, sir.
I think the intent of the ordinance was that this committee dissolves once an inspector general is confirmed.
So all I can tell you, sir, is I've looked at all of the minutes from the meetings that led up to the creation of the office, and I've listened to all of the tapes of those meetings, and I have not heard that discussion through my review of those minutes or those meetings. So I can't speak to my opinion is it was done so quickly, they literally just took the Palm Beach County OIG code and slapped it into the ordinance code and said, here you go. So, as I've looked at it, those are some of the, I mean, that's probably the biggest concern I've noticed is just that one, that the committee chair expires. But I do believe, I mean, my personal opinion is I think it is helpful for my office and for me personally to come to you and present.
I would agree with
so that you guys can tell me, hey, you may not want to do that in front of city council, or they may want to hear this, or I can get your thoughts on because I am truly a rudderless ship. I just wander around until Mr. Musa calls me and says, stop doing that, which I appreciate.
I can say that Cheryl, I know, through this process, talked about the fact that she believed the committee should stay in place. And, in fact, I think that's how we maybe changed the name to Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee, because I think her thought process was this committee should be a group made up of different agencies within the city, not just one agency, that gave the inspector general support, our thoughts. And she seemed to think that was very important. I have not been involved in an inspector general office before, so I don't have anything personal to speak from any personal experience, but I know she seemed to think it was important.
Yeah. Through the chair, I was going to ask, what is Palm Beach doing now? I mean, they have a committee.
They do, yes, ma'am. I would have to ask them how often they meet with the committee. I don't believe he presents to the committee. Their makeup is a bit different, and I can't recall off the top of my head exactly how Palm Beach is. I know Miami-Dade, it's made up of the U.S. attorney and some other folks who aren't necessarily connected to the local government as it is here in Jacksonville. I think Palm Beach County is much closer to what we have here. Obviously, they don't have the true commission, but I do believe it is the state attorney, the public defender, a rep from the – well, it's a rep from the county commission because they obviously have the municipality structure. Now, their ordinance is the one that designates the ethics chair as the chairperson. But I think, again, all three of them that I looked at did it the same way, and my guess is there just wasn't a lot of originalism when they came up with it. One did it, and everybody else just kind of followed suit.
Okay, I was just following up in relation to the ordinance drafted where
yes, ma'am.
Goes away in that county, but asking what does that county
So I believe now? It has changed since it was originally drafted 7 years ago in Palm Beach County. I was actually surprised when I looked at it in preparation for this meeting that it didn't reflect ours word for word, and I've not gone back and looked at the predecessor, but I believe that it's been changed since the office was initially created. And my guess is it was changed because they identified the same issue, but I've not verified that with Mr.
Carey. To keep the committee.
Yes, ma'am. And I will verify that with Mr. Carey down there.
If I may, madam.
Yes, sir.
Chair, I think it's important that the committee remain. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that the committee get briefings, whether it's twice a year or whenever, and to perhaps have an opportunity to express guidance, concerns, whatever, to the Inspector General. And I would say yes, I would like for Mr. Hoffman to make a recommendation at the next meeting on proposed ordinance change, perhaps, and how chairmanships should take place, whether they're elected, whether they rotate. Mm-hmm. You know, one option is to rotate them.
Yes, sir.
Among all the members.
Sure.
And so, but yeah, I think it's important that the committee stay.
I agree. I'm new, my first time, but in reviewing the document that you gave us, it looks like this committee has several different responsibilities that are ongoing over the term of the Inspector General's reign is the only word that comes to mind. I'm sure that's not the best word, role.
No, I agree. I mean, not only what you said, but I think just the exercise, frankly, for Mr. Hoffman to go through preparing for the council, I think in my experience is really, really helpful in making you look at your organization and think about what you can improve.
Yes, sir.
I agree.
It seems to me like it's important. And, of course, we're still trying to, as you talked about, 15 and 16, taking complaints, not having employees in place yet. I mean, this office is getting set up, and I think at least for some period of time, it would seem to me it's helpful for this committee to remain in place as mostly as some support and guidance, a sounding board, but and support in the community.
Yes, ma'am.
So is there an agreement that we'll ask Mr. Hoffman to draft some language, and then at our next meeting we'll take that up to include the committee and the chairperson? Any thoughts about rotating? Or, I mean, it seemed to me like there's maybe some consensus that we shouldn't designate just one agency, one position here, that we would want either some sort of rotating process or an election. Any thoughts on that? Anyone have a preference between those two? And, of course, I guess if you have a rotating, you can always put some language in that if someone, for whatever reason, just doesn't feel like they can take that year, it would just move to the next person in the rotation.
With such a small group, you know, I think rotation is the way it ought to go.
Much easier.
Much easier. It's set.
Yeah.
And
okay. I think there's a consensus then on that, that if we can put some sort of language that we would – the chairperson would rotate.
On a one-year basis, two-year basis?
It's up to the committee.
I mean, maybe actually 2 years is good. Sometimes 1 year is, you don't feel like you've got long enough in to. But that's just a thought. Anybody else?
One or two. Doesn't matter.
I'm thinking. about how long the chair of the Ethics Commission serves, which would fit with a two-year commitment. Is that comparable to the rest of your terms that you would be available and in the offices that you're in for that period of time? Does not make sense, like each of you serve for two or more year terms, Madam President?
So I was going to ask, you've been in for a year and a half, and you're about ready. So you might be able to give some insight on the 1 or 2 year. But say that the rotation fell where, let's say, a term for me started next year, and I'm not the one that's on it, or however that works, or somebody else is no longer here, it would just roll to the next person. So we would need to have some language about whether or not moving to the next rotation, next person on the rotation cycle, would be finishing a two-year term if it was 2 years, or if it's starting anew. So just considering those. I don't know that I have a preference. It seems like I appreciate the two-year from a continuity perspective and an understanding. At the same time, it might be too much for a two-year.
Yeah, on smaller committees like this, I tend to say keep it simple. I mean, I'm not sure I necessarily see a need for a vice chair. It's just I would say 2 years and let it be decided by the members of the commission. Or, you know.
Or rotate.
Well, I mean, we could rotate, but some people, if you put in a rotation thing, it may come up to some people who may not really want to serve in that capacity. There will always be someone like you who would be happy to serve in the capacity. I'm not sure we need that sort of structure for this committee that meets only once or twice a year.
But the rotation might offer an opportunity to walk through, because someone could say, I really don't have the ability to serve, and then the next person is teed up for... Okay. Are you ready to serve? And you say, well, no, not really. And so it kind of creates, instead of a picking and choosing, an order of fairness.
Well, that's...
and to be able to walk through and decide who is able and interested and willing to serve.
I think 2 years for this position actually is fine. I have been doing it about a year and a half. Of course, earlier on, the first 9 months or so was much more involved. Mm-hmm. Because we were trying to select Mr. Hoffman, and of course we had an issue. We selected someone, and then we had to come back. So it ended up being a longer process. Generally, this committee wouldn't be meeting that much. It's not a huge commitment, I think, generally. And we know Mr. Hoffman's going to be around for a while. So I think 2 years would be okay, and I agree. It seems like the rotation, with language that... in there that obviously it's okay if someone says they cannot serve this year, that it would just go to the next.
Yes, ma'am. So we'll draft a provision with a rotation with 2 years, and then I'll bring an alternate as well with a vote when we come back next time, and then you guys can look at both of them at that time, with the primary being the rotation.
And I think it would be helpful to have some definition of our responsibilities now that we have someone in place ongoing in terms of the retention aspect of the committee's responsibilities.
Yes, sir. We'll take a look at that as well.
Anybody have any thoughts on that, specifically what that maybe should include? No? Okay.
Oversight.
All right. Mr. Hoffman, we kind of got off.
Yes, ma'am. So I only have a couple more things. I apologize for the length. I just want to touch on IG certification. I'm required to be certified within 2 years. Unfortunately, the Institute is scheduled during Duval County spring break here in Jacksonville, and I have a cruise scheduled for my 20th wedding anniversary, so I'm not going to be able to get certified at the first available opportunity, but I will be certified within the two-year requirement of the ordinance code. But it's ultimately going to save the city $10,000. So
it's not a good enough excuse, man.
I don't know.
As I mentioned, we're moving into accreditation starting in this fiscal year, so the city actually executed the contract before I arrived, but they wanted the current IG signature on it, so I signed it when I got here at the end of September. Well, I got here in June, but I signed it at the end of September. So that started our cycle now for accreditation, and we hope to be accredited in fiscal year 29. And that's accreditation through the Commission on Florida Law Enforcement Accreditation, who accredits both law enforcement offices and inspector general's offices in Florida. And I think that'll be a big milestone for the office, and I think the employees deserve the ability to be accredited. So
I'm sorry, you said 2019?
Fiscal year 2019, yes, ma'am. And I think that's, so moving forward, my hope as we go into fiscal year 2018, some of my goals for the office, I hope to move beyond purely responding to complaints. I hope that we will eventually move these legacy complaints on with our staffing, and then we can become more proactive within the consolidated government and add some value there by folks asking us to do some projects here and there. My hope is that we can start to transition to where the leaders of the various independent authorities and the city want to come to us and say, hey, listen, I've got this issue, or I've got this problem, or I have this policy. Can you come and take a look at it and tell me what you think about it and provide some recommendations on it, some revisions or strengthen the internal controls process as it relates to that? As I meet with people, one of the things I like to tell them is that our value is truly is in our independence. So that what we bring that your own audit services may not be able to do or your own internal look may not do is we can come in and look at something and provide you a true independent assessment of whether or not what you're doing makes sense, it's in compliance with a policy or procedure, or anything that you ask us to take a look at from an internal controls perspective. And as I often tell people, I don't care what your policy or procedure is, I really care that you comply with your policy or procedure. If you want to rewrite your policy or procedure to say anything, that's fine. Well, we're going to come in and take a look at things and say whether or not you comply with it. And then what we really look at is internal controls. And my hope that is we move into 2018 and beyond that we'll become more proactive and less reactive in our responses to assisting the city and the consolidated government in becoming more efficient. I hope to be reporting that we've passed accreditation, and then I'll continue to look for opportunities for outreach to the citizens and to the consolidated government to continue to educate people about our office and our mission. And then, as I mentioned, my hope is to present before the council at some point in December with my fiscal year 2017 update, and then again to present before the committee in April, and then present to the council again in May with a six-month update on fiscal year 2018. And again, I apologize for the length, but that's what I had.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Holcomb.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Through the chair, I see on page 34 in your appendix that you have your audit plan.
Yes, ma'am.
And a question I have is, and potentially in your research that you're doing with other OIGs, is it customary for you to talk about what you're planning to do? I know there's a balance of you communicating, you know, that you do a risk assessment, that you do have intentions of going in certain directions, and I might need to confirm with the council auditor, but I don't recall that they disclose everything that they're going to be doing, and maybe that's more they do have a plan, but they don't ever tell about other investigations that they, and I know you don't disclose investigations, but is it customary for your office to disclose the areas that you'll be looking into?
Yes, ma'am. So my understanding from looking at the other OIGs in Florida is that all OIG offices publish their fiscal year audit plan at the beginning of that fiscal year to discuss what they're going to do. It is a three-year audit plan. We did not do a new one this year, and that was my desire to not do a new one, much to my auditor's dismay. And quite honestly, I just didn't have time to really figure out the best way to do it. And one way I really want to start doing it is more interactive by talking to the city leaders, by talking to the council, by talking to the independent authorities, and finding out those areas where they want us to look at. And what I'd like to do is develop a survey that maybe I can send out to the council members and get some electronic feedback on areas where we may want to focus our efforts, and then to sit down and do some interviews with the leadership to figure out those areas where, because again, my desire is to add value. I mean, if we can't add value, nobody's going to want us here, and that's no return on investment. And the only way we can add value is by figuring out where we need to be, and hopefully the leadership will help guide us on those areas where they feel like they've got the most risk. So the short answer is yes, ma'am, it is common that they do publish their audit plan. The long answer is that this is really just a continuation of our 2017 audit plan, because my hope is to put in place a good process by the end of this fiscal year to develop our 2019 audit plan.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair, on that question?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Hoffman, do you coordinate your audit plans with the Council Auditor's Office?
Yes, sir. So I've met with Mr. Billy twice since I've been here, and they've been incredibly helpful. And I think I'm going to increase that interactions with them because they have a great institutional knowledge. And I think on some of the audits we've done, they've highlighted some issues to us where we could have looked, or some issues that they identified last time they did it. So I think there needs to be more collaboration there. But we do coordinate with them to make sure that there's no duplication of effort. Again, I think there was a desire when the office was created to have an auditor, because those are the three branches of an OIG's office. I think if there had been more time, maybe more discussion might have been had on that. But I do think having our independent auditor, and really it's not just her audits that add value to our office, but it's her ability to help the investigators and some of the number crunching that they have to do. As you well know, I mean, there's a wealth of information now.
Do you know if the other inspector general offices in the state of Florida work in a municipality or a county government that has a structure like our council auditor's office?
So the short answer is I believe they all three do, but it's, I think the advantage they have is the municipalities where they do most of their work tend to not have internal audit divisions. So although the county might have an internal audit division, you know, I don't know the names of the cities.
I understand what you
Miami
mean.
Lakes probably doesn't have an internal audit. And as you well know, some of those municipalities are maybe only 3,000 people. And I think that's where they do a lot of their work, is in the municipalities when you look at especially Palm Beach County.
Okay. Thank you.
I think when you have smaller governments like that, I mean, we're fortunate because of the size that we have and the institutional knowledge. I think sometimes when you have smaller governments, there's more of a chance for tomfoolery, for an older word, to go on.
And the reason, Madam Chair, I bring this up, and it hasn't been an issue, and let me preface by saying the cooperation between the mayor's office and the inspector general's office has been tremendous. We both have the same focus. We both have the same agenda. You know, we want to stop any fraud, any cheating. And we both have the same agenda. Deputy Lisa Green has been tremendous. She's been extremely helpful. We have a great working relationship, but I don't want duplication. We can spend a whole week working with the council auditor's office and the inspector general's office and pulling documents and answering questions, and we've got work to do. So just want to make sure that when you show up, you're more than welcome. We'll give you whatever documents you need, any interviews you want. But I can't have the council auditor's office coming in the next week and asking for the same thing.
Yes, sir.
That's the only thing I ask.
And my goal is to never do that.
I
read all of their reports, and I read all of their legacy reports while we're in the middle of an audit, just to educate myself, because I think they do great work. So my goal is to never have that because, again, I don't want to waste people's time. And if we're asking for the same stuff they just asked for 6 months ago, that's a waste of everybody's time.
Thank you.
Well, and clearly the purpose, when the OIG office was, you know, reinstituted, I mean, there was one here in Jacksonville and it went away. And when it was reinstituted, I mean, we had a council auditor's office. So, I mean, I think clearly the point was that we didn't want to, nobody wants to duplicate.
But you can't really compare, if I may, the previous OIG office compared to what we have today. What we have today is much more structured, much more accredited, much more organized. In the past, you had a group who worked out of the mayor's office who were doing audits.
Right. Which is part of the reason I think this committee is important.
Absolutely.
You know, it's to help give that guidance and...
And to keep the structure.
Exactly. To keep the structure and make sure we're not having duplication and that... And Mr. Hoffman, I appreciate what you said at the very beginning of your presentation here about the real dollars and looking at real dollars and not just counting what you can, you know, what you can say it's... What I would liken it a little bit like to is when I go shopping and I come home with a bunch of bags and my husband asks how much I spent, and I said, well, no, not that much. I saved you. This was 30% off. I saved you, you know, $50. And he says, yeah, well, put it in my hand. And it seems to me like that's what you're talking about. It's like that's not real savings. That's not real dollars. So we want to know, I think what everybody's interested in is real dollars that you have saved or put back in into the coffers, that sort of thing.
And as so I've gone back and look at it in preparation for today, I mean, the office, as far as I've calculated, based on what the administration has agreed to, we've returned $1 million in real money, about $942,000 in real money since it was stood up, in which is comparable to Palm Beach County, which has returned $2.2 million in real dollars over 7 years. So I think we are on track for where the office needs to be.
A couple of questions then is just anything we can do for you. So far as the negotiating, is there any way in which this committee can help with any of that? The executive assistant, making her a full-time or that position full-time, which really isn't very much money, so I would really hope we could get that. Is there anything that this committee can do that would help you?
So on the executive assistant, I think Mr. Musa is on board. I think we're there. I think it was just a difficult sell this year, but I'm hopeful that...
Madam Chair, can we go to another subject?
It's Mr. Moose's favorite subject. The big thing for me is outreach. I'd really like to know what organizations I could talk to or go out and present on our mission, where you guys think it would add some value within the community. And then on the independent authorities, I just don't know yet. So I've not met with them. I've met with them just for discussions, but not on this discussion.
We can help. Maybe sooner than later, we can help on the full-time position.
So the independents might all say, hey, great, here's your money, have a good day. Lisa's been twisting his arm for...
I think he set you up on that.
So, and on the independents, I will get back to you. If we get some reluctance, I probably will reach out to Mr. Musa or to Council President and see if we can get some support for them to weigh in on the value of those contributions and on the protocols.
In looking for groups to speak to, I mean, are you looking for more private groups? I mean, the Rotaries and things like that, or do you think you're looking for...
Any group where you think we might be able to add some value. So one thing we did do this summer was we met at the request of one of the JEA unions, and they'd like us to go out and present to the union on kind of what we do and what our background is and the mission of our office, just to explain it to the union members. I think that adds some value. I think to the Rotaries, I mean, my thought on the CPACs is it just kind of puts out there that we exist. I have met with a couple of the local civic, more active local citizens when I first came in, just to kind of get their thoughts on the office and their background on the office. So those types of groups.
Okay. What about other union groups too, besides just the JEA union? I mean, there's some others, right?
So they're the ones I think right now that are kind of most concerned based on some of the work we did in fiscal year 2017. And we just want to kind of, the big push I try to, when I talk to leadership is, I don't have any authority. I mean, my authority is to write a report and make recommendations. It's up to leadership to say, hey, and sometimes we hope we never do, but we may get it wrong. I mean, Mr. Moose has been around city government a lot longer than I've been alive, I think. And his expertise is in city government. So we hopefully will write a report. And he's been great a couple times saying, hey, listen, you know, this recommendation is good, but this is really what you should have said, because this is where the problem really is. And that's background that we just don't have. So that support's been outstanding. So I think the other unions would be helpful as well. We just haven't had as much interaction because we've not created as many issues for the other unions yet.
Okay. Well, we'll all be thinking about that too. Groups to talk to. Okay, anything else you would ask of us? Anything else?
We were just talking about the protocol, ma'am. The reason we set up the protocol with JEA is because they have their own hotline. So it was a desire to take those two coordinated efforts and put those in place.
Okay. Any comments from the group? Any additional comments? Okay. If nothing else, I think we're down to public comments. Did we have anyone here? Any yellow cards? I don't see anyone and no yellow cards. So with that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, no, there's a spate of recent activity.
Yeah, no, we're actually
I think we've got it all clear.